So from parents, one huge misconception is that my kiddo can't be constipated, they're pooping every day. Well, even if they're pooping every day, they might not be getting everything out. And if they're not getting everything out, then it just continues to back up in the colon even more.
Here we go, brewing up another episode. Kylie Gibbs is on the show. Kylie, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
When I was doing my research, and I on purpose try to do as little research as possible because I like to come at topics with sort of like this like real perspective, right? I don't want to, because then I feel like I skip over some of the things. I'm like, well, everybody probably knows that because I just researched it, but I don't want to do that.
Right.
When I was looking at the topic, at least, I was like, okay, when I hear pelvic health, I think most people think the same way I do because that's how people work. We always just figure we're like everybody else. I think of females first.
Right.
And then probably males. Because then you're like, well, males also have pelvises. But then I don't even know if I've ever thought of pediatric pelvic health. So I'm guessing nobody else did. And we were just talking before I hit record, like, we didn't get much education in that.
No, not at all. It wasn't until I did a residency program after PT school that I even was aware of it. And so I started observing some sessions. We had actually 3 or 4 providers in our office at University of Michigan that treated pediatric pelvic health or were learning and starting to treat pediatric pelvic health. So I observed and said, wow, this is really cool. We can make a huge impact, not only on the kiddos that we're treating, but on the whole family unit, because you will find these parents that their life revolves around when their child has a bowel movement. If their child needs a change of clothes, they have to pack 3 or 4 or 5 changes of clothes every day because these kiddos are just going through them because they're having accidents all the time. So that's only when I first started learning about it, was during a residency.
Yeah. Where did you do that residency again? You said in Michigan?
Yeah. University of Michigan.
Nice. All right. So who do you get to work with? Cause you got like a cool practice model, right? You're sort of like, you have a home office and, you know, or your remote office, which you mentioned was your car. Who do you get to work with? So to describe the kiddos and the families that you interact with.
So actually about 30% of my caseload are kiddos of healthcare providers, funny enough. Huh. I see a lot of kiddos of PTs. I've treated surgeons' kids. Lots and lots of healthcare providers bring their kiddos in because they know that they're missing something and it's not logical the way that these things come about. And so they're saying, well, I need some help. Found you. So the kiddos that I treat, range anywhere from 8 or 9 months old, they have just transitioned onto solids and maybe they're having some constipation from that. And moms and dads just want to learn what they can do, all the way up until 18, 19 is really where I stop. Unless they're having any sort of internal issues, then I refer them out to an adult pelvic health therapist.
19 years old, right? Not 19 months.
Yeah. 19 years old. Yeah. Yeah. So right now the oldest I have in caseload is 18.
Yeah, I get confused a lot when people go from months and then they go to years. I'm like, are we still talking in months here? How old are we? Are we months or are we years? They got it.
Yeah.
All right. So the poll here was, I think I saw you on Instagram and you were like sort of sharing information. Is that right? Is that where we kind of crossed paths? Yeah. So the goal was like, I love just like how the internet works, where you're just kind of swiping, flicking, whatever. And then you come across something like, huh, I didn't even know that was a thing. And that's sort of what I thought, and really started to kind of like, you know, go down that rabbit hole. And I was like, well, then we got to have Kylie on the show. So the goal is, by the time we're done talking, the audience is at least going to know 6 things, maybe 4 of them they didn't know before. I feel like, because as you mentioned, I mean, we weren't even thinking about pelvic issues in kids, but also as you explain the families that you're working with, that sort of makes sense when you start to put it that way. When you start to put a face to it, it does. So the first thing I want to talk to you, you did mention constipation, but you mentioned that incontinence is often a symptom of constipation. Help me figure out how that works.
Yeah. So whenever kiddos are having any sort of urinary incontinence or fecal incontinence, it's normally because there's some sort of backup happening in the rectum of poop. So either they're not getting everything out every single day, or they're only having one bowel movement every 2 weeks. Those are kiddos that I see a lot. But anytime that you're having any sort of urinary fecal incontinence, it's because for urinary, the bladder is being squished by the rectum that is full of poop. And so it cannot fill to what it normally would or what it needs to. And then the bladder contracts and lets everything out. With poop, you know, the newer poo, and yeah, we're definitely going to get right in and talk about poo. The newer poo just goes right around the older hardened poop that's in the rectum.
It does?
Mm-hmm.
I had
and
no
that's idea. What's called Yeah, and that's what's called encopresis. So these kiddos who are having fecal leakage have some sort of blockage, if you will, that newer poop that's more liquid will just go right around. And I always use the analogy for parents. It's sort of like pouring pudding over ice. So it will slowly just make its way around, not for a gross graphic, but it will slowly make its way around. And what sneaks out is still really soft. So they think there's no way my kid can be constipated. The poop that's coming out is super soft, but that's because it's just leakage coming around.
I love how your analogies are food-based and very pediatric food-based. You're like, you know, you understand your audience. Yeah. You get
always me. Food-based.
All right. Well,
always food-based.
That sort of makes sense in terms of, you know, incontinence and constipation. So many might believe kids are always aware of when they have, we'll call it an accident. But you actually think this is a misconception. From your experience, you know this is a misconception. So this is something we need to dispel. So walk me through this.
Definitely. So when kiddos have the backup of poop in their rectum, what happens is when we get poop that comes down into the rectum, it stretches the rectum. It sends the signal up to the brain that says, okay, it's time to go poop. We've got enough in there. Let's go ahead and let it out. If a kiddo is on the playground or in class or just says, no way, I am scared of that automatic flush toilet. I'm definitely not going here at school. I don't like going at grandma's house. Like if they find whatever reason and they shut that signal down, the brain tells the body, hold it in, and the pelvic floor muscles contract. Everything stays right up in there. And once they do that enough, once they keep deferring those signals, the brain and the bottom stop talking to each other. So we really get this disconnect. And there's the converse side of it too, that when there's always poop sitting in the rectum, just like if you are having your glasses on all day long or you're wearing a watch all day long, you become numb to it. So those sensations don't matter anymore when there's always poop backed up in there. So if you go back and you think about, okay, I'm driving in my car. Oh my gosh, I've got to go poop. I can't go in the car. I don't want to pull over. I'm 10 minutes from home. I'll just go when I get home. When we get home, normally 10 or 15 minutes later, we'll get a much stronger signal. Kiddos that continue to defer those signals repeatedly don't get that signal. That second, a little bit louder signal. The one that they get is the emergency signal when the body goes, ready or not, here it comes, and starts to let it out. So we can retrain those signals and bring them back, but it does take a long time. The signals in my practice have been the last thing that I have experienced that will come back for a kiddo. So it does take a lot of time.
When you're saying, you know, worked on or retrained, what are your sessions like look like? Like describe them. And I'm sure there's some sort of food analogy coming, so I can't wait for it.
Yeah. So what we do is normally I will train the parents because most kiddos don't want to talk to me. They have been doctored out. So when I was in person, I do all of my sessions virtually right now. When I was in person, kiddos would hide behind the couch. They would hide under the table. I've had a couple kiddos, one girl in particular, I saw her off and on for like 2 years. She never spoke a word to me directly. She was the most beautifully compliant, like 6-year-old I've ever seen, but she was done. She just voiced everything to her mom and mom voiced it to me. So I'm really training the parents in what to do. We have a homework chart. They check off different activities that they have capacity for. So retraining the signals, we use sort of an old school proprioceptive tool of vibration. So I have kiddos when they're at home sit on a vibrating pad and that can reawaken some of those signals. So if you think back to some neuromuscular recruitment techniques, you use vibration on a muscle to wake it up and regain those signals. Same thing with the bottom. So if you think of if you were to sit on your cell phone and you didn't realize you were sitting on it and somebody called you and it was on vibrate, you go, whoa, what's going on? So we're trying to make that happen with those signals.
If you haven't already started, I could feel the beginnings of an app, Kylie, that you could somehow code or work with a coder to create for just that thing. A little upset that there was no food analogies in that one, but I'm sure we still have some coming up.
We do.
Hey, where are you going with your PT career? That's not rhetorical. I want to know. Would you like to embark on an extraordinary patient care adventure? That's what they call it. Some people might call it travel therapy. Find out more at jacksontherapy.com. This is perfect for physical therapists who are eager to make their mark. Discover where your skills can take you at jacksontherapy.com with Jackson Therapy Partners. And here's a question for you. Are you frustrated with your EMR? Feel like it should do more, be easier? Yeah, take the next step. Maybe try something new. How about an EMR that's all in one? Seamless integrations of patient portals, marketing automations, and billing, all at an unbeatable value. Plus, switching over is a breeze. See what you can do with MW Therapy and their all-in-one EMR at mwtherapy.com. And how would you like to boost your bottom line and help more people? You can do both of those things without having to work more. Smarter, not harder, kids. Boost your clinic's revenue by $290 per patient per quarter by adding remote therapeutic monitoring. You've heard about it, but you're like, I don't know where to get started. Is it complicated? Well, what if you knew where to get started and it wasn't complicated? That's what Physiotech is here for. Kickstart your RTM at physiotech.ca. That's physiotech.ca right now with Physiotech. So here's a misconception that I think I was also on the, you know, wrong side of this. You tell me. You've observed that pelvic floor muscles in children are often tight, not weak, and that's where the issue comes in. So walk me through that, and then how does that sort of like guide your approach?
Yeah, so with kiddos, if they are trying to hold everything in, so think back to those signals. I'm deferring the signal that I need to go to the bathroom. I don't want to go. I don't have time to go. I don't want to stop doing what I'm doing. The pelvic floor muscles have to tighten up and hold everything in. So we often see that this repeated behavior shortens those muscles and tighten, 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 so that when they need to go and they're trying to let everything out, the pelvic floor muscles aren't able to relax and fully help to evacuate either the bowel or the bladder. And so instead of doing contractions, I've had so many families come to me and say, well, our pediatrician just told us to do Kegels, just start contracting the pelvic floor. And that's not what we want to do. We do want to retrain the muscles and tell them how to contract but relax properly, because that's what we need to do. So we do a lot of stretching. It depends on what activities they're involved in. I've treated different figure skaters, hockey players, and even just some kiddos that, you know, W-sit, their core is super weak. So figuring out what other parts of their body are contributing to that tightness in the pelvic floor is what we also address too. But they're just super, super tight because they're trying to hold it in. And for most kiddos that have any sort of accidents during the day, they are so afraid of having another accident that they are constantly clenching and trying their hardest to hold it in. And it's pretty logical on their part. Like, why wouldn't I try and squeeze and hold it in? But then everything just gets super tight. One analogy I tell parents is that if you've ever been driving and you have your hands on the steering wheel in traffic, and then all of a sudden you're out of traffic and you go, whoa, I had no idea I was clenching the wheel like that. It's sort of like that with the pelvic floor muscles. We have to retrain them how to relax.
How do you educate parents in terms of spotting when these things are going on? I mean, I know from indirect experience, there's some behavior changes or things. I mean, and parents are just crazy. I mean, some parents are crazy in tune with their kids. Like, they know exactly what's going on in their kid's brain.
Yeah. And, you know, I have a 2.5-year-old and I can tell you exactly, you know, what she's going to do before she does it. And, you know, even before she farts, like if you think of the homunculus, the genitalia sits right next to toes and feet. And so a lot of kiddos will go up on their tippy toes and try and contract everything, or you see them do completely straight leg or slam their legs together, trying to hold everything in. And they don't even realize they're doing it a lot of times, or they'll get in different positions. I've got one kiddo who will completely like get into a ball if he is watching TV or something, and His mom's like, dude, you need to go poop. He's like 7 or 8. He's like, no, I don't. She's like, you are in a ball trying to hold yourself together. You need to go poop. So they don't even realize a lot of times that they're doing these things. And if you've ever seen a kiddo do a pee-pee dance, they're wiggling side to side. They're holding it together.
We've all done a pee-pee dance. Yeah.
We've all done a pee-pee dance for sure. And they're just trying to hold it in so much. So lots of parents would be like, oh, that's what's going on. Or kiddos getting really uncomfortable. They can also have spasms happening too if their pelvic floor muscles are super tight, especially if there's gas coming out too. And yeah, they can spot the signs. Once you bring it to their attention, they can spot the signs really easily.
So a lot of the things you're talking about in terms of talking to the parents feels like a lot of this is going to be psychological behavior change. Like, in, you know, you did advanced education on this. How much were you taught? How much do you refer out? How much did you learn yourself? Because it feels like this is a lot of behavior on top of physical and biomechanics.
Yeah, so I did learn a lot myself. I also have a bachelor's in psychology, so I've studied it. Yeah, it does help, but I definitely didn't learn any of this in my bachelor's degree either. But I do have a couple of psychiatrists and psychologists that I refer out to when needed. And there, I've been really thankful to network in my area. And I have two in particular. One just retired and she was more play-based therapy. Another one is more talk therapy. So I send older kids to him. But it really does help with those behavioral strategies. But as physical therapists in our PEDS realm, we are trained in those behavioral strategies. So if you think of working with kiddos who have any sort of attention issues, either ADHD or autism, we know how to work with those kids. If you apply those behavioral adjustment principles to any kiddo, any adult too, you're going to see great behavioral changes. So with my kids, I will do, for example, this one little girl, she was always fighting her parents and she was 5 years old at that point. She was always fighting them when it was time to sit on the potty. So, well, do you have a chart, a schedule chart? And so they added in, okay, we do lunch, we do playtime, we sit on the potty, then we do whatever else. And by adding that in, she then was able to know what came next and she stopped fighting them. She also, this same little girl, her breakthrough and her last ability to go potty every single day by herself was adding in a help chart. So school wanted her to be independent with bowel movements on the potty and cleaning herself up and just pottying in general. She was good for pee, but not great for poop, which I mean, at age 5 is pretty common. So what we did was a help chart and she had 4 options. She could pick her help. So if she wanted mom or dad to stand in the bathroom with her, if she wanted help undressing, wiping, or redressing, then she got to pick which help she got. And for her, that gave her control. So the one things, if you think about kiddos, what can they actually control in their life? You know, how much they put in and how much they get out, essentially. So they can close the top and the bottom and that's about it. But otherwise they don't have a lot of control. So giving these kiddos more control can sometimes help with these issues. I've also had kiddos that was the only time they got one-on-one with parents. And so we had to find another avenue for kiddos to spend more quality time rather than 20 minutes sitting on the toilet trying to have a poop or saying, wait, I don't think I got everything out, just so mom would stay longer. Mm-hmm. There was one boy I treated in Michigan who I think he had like 6 or 7 older siblings. And it was pretty sad. They took the doors off the bathroom because he would spend over an hour in there trying to poop. But he finally told me, it's the only alone time that I get. So that's why I stay in there for so long. So trying to find the root of some of these issues can be really psychological.
I was going to say, is this a psych? So you're going to say it depends because everybody's different. But is this more often a psychological issue that manifests physically or a physical issue that manifests and then does some psychological things? Or it's chicken and egg?
It's definitely chicken and egg. So it's both. It's always both. So whether it starts as psychological, I have one little girl I'm seeing now, they started on a road trip moving from the West Coast to the East Coast, and they took like a week and a half and she refused to poop for that entire week and a half. She was perfectly fine and regular. And then that snowballed into more physical issues. I have other kids who have these physical issues, right? So they are not getting everything out each time. Maybe they went from pooping in diapers to pooping on the toilet, and biomechanically they're not set up well. And so they couldn't get everything out. So now this little 20 to 30% that they're not getting out backs up and up and up and up in the colon. And now they have a psychological issue because when they're pooping, it's like a huge brick, right? And they are having so much pain and discomfort and just trauma from getting out this constipation that's been building up.
All right. Well, you brought up biomechanics. How much of the potty posture, right? We've all seen the videos, right? Squatty potty. How much of this potty posture, you know, what is good potty posture? Is it different for kids than it is for adults? But how much of that posture does that affect pediatric incontinence?
A lot. So if we aren't positioned well on the toilet, we can't get everything out. So if you think of a kiddo who is 4 feet tall, right, and you put them on one of our toilets, the toilets now are huge. Their feet are going to be dangling. I don't know, you know, if you can think about sitting on like a bar height stool, your feet are dangling. You kind of feel like you're going to fall off if you don't have some foot support.
Sure.
And that's the same with them on the toilet. So they clench or they hold on with their hands to try not to fall in or to try not to fall off. And that clenching of all of their muscles, their glutes, everything will prevent the pelvic floor from being able to relax. So it's more important in kiddos to be positioned properly on the potty. So getting them a footstool, getting them a toilet topper, ring reducer, whatever it takes for them to be super comfortable, or using a small potty at first and then transitioning to the bigger potty. I had one client that I saw that they bought their child a fully functioning, just miniature toilet in her room because she had an ensuite bathroom, which was pretty posh for a 3-year-old. It's great, but they bought her a biomechanically sized model for her when she started potty training, which was amazing.
Wow. Yeah. It's going above and beyond for the kid right there.
I know.
Sure, it helped out.
Yeah, she did great. But going then on other toilets was an issue. So trying to figure out what's going to work best for kiddos in the long run is always helpful.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned treatment, you mentioned some anatomy. Let's go further up. Intestines or muscles? And you've mentioned training, retraining. What's your approach for treating them in terms of the intestines in pediatric cases?
Yeah, so a lot of the kiddos that I see have slower bowel motility, and some providers, some MDs or urologists or even GIs will tell you the corn test, which I love,
is the corn test.
So the corn test, if you've never done it, please do it. It's where you essentially eat corn for one meal and see how long it takes for you to poop it out, because corn does not break down in our system, so it looks the same as when you ingested it. So you eat it for one meal only, and then you spot it in your poop. It's a beautifully scientific thing to do. Kids love it. If they have siblings, I tell them it's the corn poop race and they all search for it. They are just so excited of who can poop out corn the first time. So you can see, so normal bowel motility is anywhere from 24 to 72 hours. That's 1 to 3 days. That's a pretty long variation. So 24 to 36 hours is usually what my kiddos will be at when they're having daily or frequent enough bowel movements. But I've had some kiddos that will have corn in their poop at 2 days, at 4 days, and then a week later. And so you know that their bowel motility is not where it needs to be. So it's not a precise test, right? We can't use it as the end-all be-all diagnostic, but it's fun. Kids like it. It's an easy test to see sort of what's going on. And then I can address them with electrical abdominal stimulation. So I use just a regular abdominal stimulation unit. I put it on their belly. I train parents how to do it at home. There's actually a